Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I feel like singing right now, all right?
No.
The guest, yes, you let me sing for 2 seconds.
Que bella cosa, una giornata in sole, un'aria serena dopo una tempesta, bell'aria fresca, pareggiare la festa, che bella cosa, una giornata in sole.
And that is for today's guest. Once you know that guest's name, you'll understand why I went on a rant for 30 seconds. But thank you, Jake. How are you doing?
You're beautiful man, Gino. I'm doing great, always making it happen. Today's guest is the founder of and CEO of Simplero, an all-in-one platform helping coaches, consultants, and entrepreneurs build their business. He was a coder since the age of 5. It's kind of like a Boy Scout for computers. And essentially, he thinks that systems and continuously looks for ways to optimize the world around him. So without further ado, Kelvin Corelli, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to meet you guys.
First time getting introduced with opera?
With what? Sorry?
I said the first time getting introduced with an opera song?
With opera? Yes, it is. It is.
All
right. I didn't know about Franco Corelli. How could I not know?
Well, that's what Gino's for. So,
yeah.
All right. Long-winded intro, but let's kick this thing off. Please share with us a little bit about your background and how you got started in business.
For me, it was always the only option. Both my parents were entrepreneurs. My mom actually started a software company in 1980.
They didn't have software in 1980.
Right. It was before the PC was invented. Both my parents were into software back from the 70s, and my mom started a software company, grew it to 50 people, market leading in Denmark, and my dad had his own company. So I was sort of born into that software world and entrepreneurial world, and it's just the obvious natural thing for me to do.
So when you say natural thing for you to do, did you like to do it, or did you seem as if you were forced into doing it?
I loved doing it. So it's interesting. So my brother and I both learned, my dad would teach both of us, but I really took to it. And I think it's partly how my brain was wired, probably being slightly on the spectrum. I was bullied in school and felt really unsafe at school. And so I could just withdraw and play with my computers and not get bullied. So I got really good at, I think actually most good engineers are good engineers because they're scared of people. Right.
And so are scary. They should be. Everyone should be scared of people. I 100% right. Agree with this.
Yeah.
So I live out in the woods.
Yeah, right.
I don't even know. Where are we going next, Jake? So listen, when you're with your parents, what did you learn from them as far as being entrepreneurs? To grow a 50-person business in Denmark back in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't like it is today where you can scale up real quick. What did your parents teach you about entrepreneurship?
I think it's the just pretty relaxed attitude about it. What you do, it's just over the kitchen table, how are you going to do this, how are you going to do that, always, of course, when you have team, there's always challenges and issues with the team and marketing conditions, but I think it was just the naturalness again of those conversations that my parents would have over the dinner table.
And what were those conversations like? I mean, because I had a parent, my father, who owned the restaurant, my mom was stay at home. So their conversation was a lot different than what your two parents are talking about. My dad's more like, hey, what's for dinner? My mom, she's not in the entrepreneurial world. She may be taking care of the bills, but what does that conversation look like?
Yeah, it was let me see if I can remember some of them. It's I remember definitely a lot of things around team, hey, how do we do with this person's sales, do we need to replace him or have him do something else or the engineers, do we have the right engineers? Do we need some different engineers? So a lot of the team stuff, I think there's also what happened later on. They were making software for DOS, and then Microsoft comes in with Microsoft Office, which was basically Windows competing directly with my mom's company. And so definitely that whole arcade market's changing. What do we do? How do we adapt?
It had to be a little challenging.
Oh yeah. It crushed them. It did. like they didn't even they essentially didn't survive that. My parents sold the company to someone, but not for much. But they had a good run. So,
and then when did you start in business yourself? What was your first venture in the business world?
My first venture was when I was 12, 13. I started writing software, both sort of, you know, consulting, meaning just like contract software for hire. For a friend of my parents worked for a patent office, and they needed some software to whatever, do something. I forget what it was. And I wrote that for them and made some good money as a 12-year-old. And then I remember as a kid, my mom would go to this a trade show where they would show off the software, and they would create like this demo that would demonstrate on a screen what the software could do, so they didn't have to explain it every time, but you could just sit there and run and explain, and then they could talk to people. And they used a product from IBM called IBM StoryMaker. And that would allow you to, on a DOS screen, right, no graphics, to create these like demos that would have these fancy like effects and stuff. And I thought that StoryMaker was really crap. So I wrote a better version of that basically and sold that as a product. It was my first software product that I sold to like a handful of people or something, but not, it wasn't. I didn't have the internet, right? So it was hard to find customers back then.
Wow. Go ahead, Jake. Sorry.
No, I was saying, how old were you at that time?
Yeah, I was like 12, 13, 14 years old. Yeah. There's another moment that I remember, which was that Denmark went through this transition from 6-digit phone numbers to 8-digit phone numbers. And so everybody had to change their phone number. And it was a major sort of database upgrade, update kind of situation. There was a formula for how to get from the 6 digits to the 8 digits. And so I wrote some software that could translate 6-digit numbers into the new 8-digit one. And then you could run that and apply that to your database. And so a lot of people use that.
And how did you take all those skills that you learned to create the company that you have right now? And what gave you the idea to create this new company?
Yeah, funny because I started several companies, and some of them worked fairly well, and most of it was struggle. And that led me to a process of personal growth. So I started to work with a coach, and I ended up taking a coach education. I worked with a spiritual teacher and got therapy of various forms. And there's a period there, some like 20 years ago, that really kind of reoriented me. I was very, very resistant to anything that had to do with like mindset or coaching or something. I had this crazy ass belief. Do you guys have any hint of that? I had this weird belief that if you needed any kind of help, then it didn't count, right? Even if you succeeded, it didn't count. Like you were still not worthy. You're still not okay because you had to prove that you could do these things on your own, or you were like a failure as a human being. That was how my mind was.
Did you have heroes and you put them on a pedestal and just thought they got there on their own without getting any help along the way?
100%. Right. Totally. Yeah. I just imagined that they did or something. They had like some magic thing. And I was like hoping that I had that magic.
You didn't want to be a sellout. You want to be the authentic hero, right? You can't get help along the way.
Yeah. Not the one that with training wheels. Right.
And then, So then how did you overcome that limiting belief? That's not even a limiting belief. That's a massive limiting belief.
That's huge.
So you start getting the help because if you don't get the help, you get this spiral. You get this self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, I need the help. Right. I don't need the help. How did you overcome that?
That's where I was. Well, I just succumbed to it. I crashed. I had in my head, I had to be this incredible, massive billionaire level, like Steve Jobs, Bill Gates level success by my 30s. By 30 flat, or I might as well go kill myself. That was how I was wired. And so when I turned 30, that was painful. But then by sort of 33, I just had to face the facts and be like, okay, it didn't happen. I failed as a human being, and I like wanted to kill myself. And then I was
this like a result of being almost like a child prodigy? You're sort of like one of the kids on the Cosby Show. So it was you had this like early success that you had to live up to, but the world changed along the way.
It's a good question. Yeah, it might be. I don't know if it's the world changing. I think it was just that. Yeah, I think you're onto something there. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that.
Well, because you had more success at 12 than most people right. probably experience on an entrepreneurial level. Because there's not a ton of entrepreneurs out there. I mean, there's a lot of people out there doing this stuff now. But I mean, the vast majority of people are, you know, working for someone else. So that's odd for a kid to have that experience. So you probably had pretty high expectations that you were going to be the, you know, Mickey 100%. Mantle of coding or the Steve Jobs, whatever you want to say.
Yeah. Well, I think partly also, right, I got really good at these things because I felt that pressure. Like I have to prove myself constantly. And so I 100%, I think there's something to that.
And what did the coaching help you with once you started doing the coaching and the spiritual journey and the personal development and the relationship with yourself? You can talk about relationship with self that most people don't have. So what did that help?
So it helped me, you know, realize that these, I think the big, huge moment for me was realizing that just because I have the thought that I'm a failure, or for example, that was a big one for me. Just because that thought pops into my head doesn't mean it's true. Like I lived for many years, I lived in fear of my own thoughts because I hope this thought that I'm a failure doesn't show up, because then like I'll feel like shit and I'll be like, it'll be proof that I'm a failure. If I'm thinking it must be because it's true. And then I would keep like living in fear of that. And of course, like I'd be like, don't think you're a failure. Don't feel you're a failure. Like,
don't get any help because it makes you even more of a loser. Damn, that's a death spiral right there if I've ever seen one. Holy cow. Right. Congrats on pulling yourself out of that, just say the least.
Yeah, but it was really like, okay, I'm done. I've already failed. Not like, where do we go from here? Right. That was kind of my breaking point.
Wow. And so where do you go from here? Where did you go from there? The recovery. It sounds like you crashed, you came to the bottom, now you're starting to recover. What does that look like?
Just realizing that I needed help and getting help. So a big thing for me too was I discovered this a body therapy system that's from Denmark. It's called Body SDS, Body Self-Development System. And that is remarkable. I remember in 2007, I had my first session, and it's like on a massage table. They work on your body. It's very intense, very painful, work on the joints a lot. And then he kind of got to my belly area and he started pushing in there. And then
this is PG, right?
Yes.
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
And then after doing that, like working on me for like 30, 35 minutes, he left the room and I just started bawling. I just like started crying like crazy for like 20 minutes, crying.
I never heard of anything like this.
And then laughing a little bit and then crying some more. And it was like, and then it was like quiet after 20 minutes of this. And it was at that point I hadn't cried in years. And it's the magic of going through the body to those layers of buried emotion so that you can get them out and release them.
Did you have any idea that was going to happen to you?
No.
Did he say that's it's a common result?
Yeah, I know now that it is, but he didn't give me any warning.
He didn't give you a prep before, but no, he said that this is typical. And it wasn't just because he physically abused you to the point of physical pain, right? Okay. I'm just trying to like that's a wild story. Like I never heard of anyone getting massaged to tears.
It's crazy, but I've done it hundreds of times since. It's such a powerful therapy.
Do you still
form.
Cry? Do you still make you cry when you do it, or?
Yeah,
what not the hell?
Most of the time, yeah. A lot
Gino,
of times.
We got to get massages like this,
Jake. Yeah. We know what's going. You know what's
They're
going
doing
on
in the States or no?
Not yet. I mean, I'm working, so now I've like worked my way up that food chain, and now I'm friends and actually business partners with the founder of that system. And he's trained over 700 therapists in Denmark, but I don't, as far as I know, nobody is in the U.S. So I want to get that education and therapy over to the U.S. eventually.
Like Viking stuff is popular now. You could brand it like something to do like the Viking cry massage or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we should talk about what's actually We should talk about what's actually going on, though, Jay, because it's important. Because what's going on is when you're getting a massage like that, you have adrenals, you have different pressure points, you have different emotions that are stored in your body, and all of a sudden you start touching them or you start reflecting upon it. There are acupressure points in your body that relate to that, and if you've had these emotions stored forever or for a long time, or you haven't tapped into them, all of a sudden they become known. You're not even aware.
You guys are way over my head right now. You're telling me there's emotions stored outside of your brain, inside your body.
Absolutely, and emotional response. When something happens to you, there's pathways that are built into it. You're not feeling the pain where the pain is. You're feeling in your brain because there's a response that goes to your brain. So every action you take, if you're not aware of it now, is there stimulus and a response? The stimulus happens and then you respond to it. As you get older in life, you start to understand that, hey, you have the ability to control the response. When you're younger, you fly off the handle. But as you get older, hopefully, as you mature, you can start creating that response and start taking care of that response. You can't get triggered. No one can trigger you. You can only get triggered yourself if you understand that, you become aware of your thoughts and your actions. Does that make sense, Calvin? Did I try to sum it up?
100%.
Yeah. Man, I'm learning some stuff today, boys. I'm telling you.
So, Calvin, how did you
know, like long, 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 detailed, very insightful explanation? Jay's like, yeah, control yourself.
Calvin, how does that help in business, though? I mean, how did that actually translate into like becoming a successful entrepreneur?
Right, it means everything, right? Because like almost all of our behavior, our actions are controlled by our unconscious mind, right? We think that we're in control, but we're not. Jake, sorry.
So, I try. So
we can try to change our behavior in the short run, right? With specific, like, okay, do this, do this, do this. And like, I need to be better at this and like not act in this way or whatever. But it's a stopgap. Like it's only going to last so long, and it's only going to take you so far, because then when you're in a stressful situation, you're going to revert back to the old behavior. Mm-hmm. So the more that you can do real permanent change, you know, and this is a phenomenal tool for it, the more that you can grow and evolve as a person, and then that better behavior becomes natural.
Calvin, can I ask you, in your work, were you ever able to go back into your past? Because I've been to some coaching sessions, and I've went to couples coaching, and one of the things that I learned over the last few months, and I never really thought about it, really to dive back into your past, into your childhood, and see how your parents were treated you, or how you were treated by them, and go with that. Did you go into that, and did you see how that affected your life? Because everything you're saying, you're unconscious, you know, you might have had a great relationship with your parents, but they might have done something to you, and you bring that into the future. Yeah. Did you explore that?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, a lot. So what I love about the body therapy is that you don't really need to know the story, because you're just letting these old emotions disappear. But going back to the story is super powerful. I had a spiritual teacher back then in 2004-5-ish as well, where we did a lot of that. It's like, whatever you're feeling now, go back. He took me on this time travel, go back to what's the earliest memory that has the same feeling flavor, and then kind of replay that and do it better, which is super powerful. I was actually just yesterday with a spiritual coach that I work with now. We did a session, and we were back at when I was a kid, after school, we had a French tutor. So my brother and I, we would come home after school, and we'd have this French tutor who was a neighbor that happened to be good at French. And because we had a summer house in the south of France. And so my dad wanted us to learn French. And my brother and I, we just wouldn't we hated it. It was so boring. And so we started to like run into the kitchen and do snacks and like do all these like silly, stupid things to try to avoid this. And eventually, after a couple months of this, the tutor there talked to my parents and said, hey, these kids just don't want to learn this thing. Like, why don't we stop? And so we stopped. And so my spiritual coach yesterday, she pointed out, like, this is a pattern that I still have. Mm-hmm. That when I'm in a situation that I'm not like liking, I kind of go into feeling trapped. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of withdraw and distract and do all these things and hoping it's going to go away. And she helped me see, crap, I've done that with employees that I didn't work well with. Instead of just owning it and being a grown-up about it and being like, hey, here's what's like, that part of me would go into like, like kind of avoiding, like distracting, all these things, and then like waiting for people to quit. Right.
But this is not a bad move.
But this is driven by the unconscious, and like only when you get conscious about it can you change it.
That's how I am at the DMV and any government agency. I go into my shell. Get away from me, you creeps.
When I was around 5 years old, I remember being in my grandmother's house, and she said, "Let's go to the store." So I went to the store with her, and I remember there was a bag of toy soldiers there, and I wanted to buy these toy soldiers really bad. And she's like, "You know, Gino, we can't afford it. I don't have the money right now." There's no credit cards back then. She says, "But when your mother comes home, we'll come back to the store." And I remember vividly saying, "No, you're not going to buy them for me." So when we came back home, I don't even remember if we went back to the store, but I remember the impulse of, if there's something there, I have to do it, or else I'm going to lose it. And now when emails come in, or I have conversations or something that's doable, maybe it's a good trait because you get shit done, but at the same token, it can wear on you. And I didn't realize this until a couple of years ago. And I'm like, wow, why do I have to do something when it comes in, or else I feel like a failure, or won't get done?
She's going to take the toy soldiers away from you.
Dude, I don't remember
that's
getting
my middle child. That's why you're Chase's godfather, Gino, right? That's exactly how he acts.
Yeah, so I'm like, "Grandma, you don't got $2 for some toy soldiers?" She didn't. She was on fixed income. She didn't have credit cards. But it's really funny. Trace back those memories and sit down and have the work on yourself. Now, the relationship to yourself, let's talk about that real quick, because I think it's really important. Everyone says
– one thing, Gino.
Absolutely.
So the power exactly is that once you do that work, now you get to choose.
Yes.
Right. You can still use that behavior if you want to, but you don't have to be a slave to it.
Mm. Yes. And that's true, because you know, if you feel like at a young age you're abandoned, let's just say for instance, and all of a sudden you don't remember unconsciously, and then all of a sudden you have problems connecting with people, and you feel like if you – so like you said, it's proactive. If you want to use that and just understand why you're doing that behavior, don't beat yourself up about it. Understand why it's happening, and then once you have that power, that control, which Jake loves, but at least you can decide. You can make that decision. It's important.
Wield it. That's your entrepreneurial superpower. Wield it. Control it.
That's
and now you're aware of it. So you have that awareness that you can actually do it. Because I hate when people talk about this stuff and they're like, "Oh, you know, you think it's your superpower, but it's really holding you back." If you can control it, you become, you know, something like out of the X-Men. All right. You're half mutant now, Gino. You're amazing. Yeah. So keep it up.
Now I'm going to talk about a topic that Jake doesn't like to talk about. It's the relationship with yourself. Yourself. It's okay.
Yeah, I love myself.
I know. Well, do you really love yourself?
It's do. Look how good I got this green here. I'm talking to smart dudes. I made it in this world, all right?
But seriously, love thy neighbor as thyself. That presupposes that you love yourself. And, you know, Calvin, at one point, you're saying you're having serious thoughts, suicidal. At that point, you didn't love yourself. How did you end up coming to the realization that you need to work on yourself, you need to love yourself before you can love others? Because happy wife, happy life, that's a bunch of nonsense. Because you cannot make another person happy. You can only make yourself happy. And then once you're happy, you exude that happiness. I think others around you will feel that and they may be attracted to that. But that's not your job to make others happy. How did you work through that process in your life?
It was quite a nut to crack. I was very committed to not loving myself, to criticizing myself. I had this belief that if I allowed a little bit of love to enter my being, my heart, whatever, then I would stop doing the work that I needed to do to be lovable. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm not okay yet. And if I let any love come in there, I'll stop working hard to be okay.
There's his superpower.
Right? What?
That's your superpower. We found Gino's, and that was yours. That was your drive right there.
It was totally my drive, right? But it was destroying me.
Until you learn to control it, right?
Exactly. And logically, it doesn't make any sense, right? I'm not lovable yet, therefore, don't give me love. It's like, well, if I'm like, if people are loving me, like, what? You would assume that I am lovable. But I was like, no, don't. When I look at society as well, I really think that the biggest pandemic that we have is self-hate or lack of self-love, right? It destroys so many things.
I think it's ripping through the world right now. I think so many people out there hate themselves. I think it's part of the plague that just gets so many people down at this point.
It's massive. And then what happens is when we're down on ourselves, when we hate ourselves unconsciously, we're not aware that we do, but we do, then we start to put all of our focus and attention out there on trying to fix other people or help mm-hmm. other people, but in a way that keeps them trapped in their, you know, in helplessness.
You're describing collectivism right now.
Yeah.
I'm just, right? I'm going to say it. Like, I know it's not like people don't like to hear that, but that's what you're describing right now to a certain degree. Yeah.
No, that's how that works. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But let's talk about that. I don't want to call it hatred, but maybe it's a little low self-esteem. So when you have low self-esteem, all of a sudden you're being dictated by others. You can't make decisions for yourself. And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden you go down that path. You can't have a logical conversation. And you think everyone's saying something towards you. You're the stimulus response. All of a sudden mm-hmm. you're getting a response. And instead of you being the more I don't want to say intelligent, but the one who can process it and say, well, that may work for me. Let me think about that. No, you react right away and go, no, that person must be bashing me, because you don't have that foundation of yourself and that self-control. Yeah. Well, self-worth. I mean, if you think people are always criticizing you, you're going to take it as that point. Because maybe when you were younger, you're criticized. And all of a sudden, I had that thing too. Everyone would criticize me when I was younger. Now someone says something, every now and again, I get a little tweak, Jake. I'm like,
have you noticed, Gino, that you only get upset if people say something negative about you that you already agree with yourself?
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you don't agree with their assessment, it doesn't hurt you. So all we do is we run around being afraid that other people agree with us.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I'd ask you, how does this help with your entrepreneurial venture? You talk about the spiritual workout. Like, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So again, like one of the things that I realized just recently, like a month ago or something, is like when I was like, I've been kind of plateauing business wise, revenue wise, and other areas for a bit. And when I started to really see this, I was like, oh, I was visualizing what would it like if I had the outcomes that I wanted in my life. How would I feel like? And what I realized, what I felt really bad, actually. Like I had this all this negative association with actually achieving my goals, not just business, but also sort of the having the body that I want and things like that. Yeah, because there are several parts to it. One is I have a deep fear of outshining. When I was a kid, my brother, he's 18 years older than me, and I learned to read before him. So I was reading to my brother, and it was great. I enjoyed it. I was really good at it, and I loved reading. But I could sense that my parents were uneasy about it. My brother was uneasy about it. And so I was like, oh, don't – like if you're too smart, too successful, too good.
So he's like 23 and you're 5 and you're reading to him?
No, 18 months, I think.
Oh, 18 months. I was like, whoa. 18
months.
Yeah,
18 months. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, sorry.
That really threw me off. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no. 18 months. So yeah, there's the outshining part. And I had this idea, like my family was, you know, upper middle class, like, or maybe even upper class, like we're like fairly successful, well off family. Most of my friends were not. And I felt like my house was kind of cold and there was no connection, intimacy. And my friend's house had a lot of love. So I associated being rich with lack of connection. And so all of these different associations in my brain the more I started feeling into what would it actually feel to have all these things that I know I want and that I'm working for, I started crying. And I just felt the pain of it. I'm like, no wonder, right? No wonder that I keep sabotaging myself and my own success. Like I start to work out and I eat right and I get like in shape and then I start to just stop. I was like, why? Well, that's why. So it impacts, and the same thing with business, right? So I'll do something stupid, like focus on the wrong things or hire some, you know, contractor that does nothing for my tens of thousands of dollars, or like find ways to throw away good money just to, I don't know, not have the success.
And that's really relevant for the show because we're multifamily investors and we teach students how to invest in real estate. And you see some of the students do really well and then some others that just fall off. And maybe it's time that for those of you listening out there to reassess, to go back and do some work on yourself and say, why is it every time that I start something new, do I stop? And oh, this, I'm sabotaging myself. Oh, I don't want success. We had Phil McKernan on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he was talking about a soccer player, very same thing. He was a younger brother, and his brother was older. His brother actually quit to give his younger brother a chance. So his brother, a younger brother, became famous, and he felt the resentment. He felt really bad. So he was sort of holding himself back mentally because he didn't want to outshine and he didn't want to show off in front of his brother. And that is something that's just amazing. And if you don't have the conversation with somebody and you don't spend the time to work on yourself, you have those ceilings that you don't even know you have. And then once he figured that out, and he could accept it, and he could say thanks to his brother, and he wasn't doing anything to his brother, and you can work through that, the sky's the limit.
He was subconsciously, though. Yeah, he was subconsciously doing something to his brother. Kelvin, I'd love to hear very much like a step-by-step in your journey that you took to what to me sounds like break the chains. It sounded like you're in jail. And I know you've touched on a few of them, but if you don't mind, if there was like five steps that you took or five components to you breaking those chains, I'd love to just hear you detail those.
Yeah. A big part for me was that emotional piece. So I would go with my spiritual teacher. We would take anything that came up in the ordinary.
And what's a spiritual teacher? Just because it's a little vague sounding to me and for the
folks.
I'll
share with you exactly how he worked with me. So basically, something happens. Like I remember one time, I had my car and it needed to go in for some kind of service. And it was winter and wet and cold in Copenhagen. I had to drive it out to there and dark and pre-GPS. And then I had to take a bus, like walk, find my way home on a bus. And this again was pre-GPS and Google Maps and directions and all that stuff. And I just felt so sorry for myself. And so I was talking to to Bodhi is his name, that night. And he was like, okay, so just feel that feeling. What is the feeling in your body? And let's just sit with that for a minute. And I would never do that before, right? It's like, instead of going into the story in my head, and it's also because like my ex-wife and she should, and my dad and my parents, like all the stories in my head, just forget all that. Let's just, how is it feeling in my body? One of the things he taught me that was so impactful is, instead of trying to label the feelings, it's fear, it's sadness or whatever, notice the sensations in your body. Mm-hmm. All feelings have some sensation, sort of physical sensation, like wobbling or something. Just sit with that and realize that's all it is, right? Like we don't have to be scared of these things. And then he would say, all right, what's the earliest memory that comes to mind where you had the same feeling? And then I'd be back as a five-year-old or whatever. And then he'd say, okay, freeze time. Like imagine the situation in your head, look at it, something like I remember one time I was, I bought this water bed. It was just fancy things, like big bag of water that you sleep on. I loved it. And my dad, when he found out, he just freaked the fuck out. So he came in and woke me up and started yelling and screaming at me out of the blue. It frightened me like crazy. And so, like a situation like that.
How old were you?
That was older. That was like 17-ish. So you take a situation like that, and then you what he taught me to do is like 17-year-old Calvin is there with current, day Calvin. I can't change what happens, but I can sit down with that 17-year-old version of me and say, hey, look, this is what's going to happen. In a few minutes, your dad's going to come barging in and start yelling and screaming at you. Just know that I'm here for you. It has nothing to do with you. Like you're there for yourself back then, like you wish someone had been for you mm-hmm. then, right? Mm-hmm. That could help you walk through it. Still happens. He barges in, he starts screaming. Then you pick yourself back up after and it's like, hey, like, it's okay. We got this. Like, you're going to grow up. It's going to be amazing. We're going to do fantastic things together. Don't worry about it. So that was doing that over and over and over again, every time something would come up. Just the way I think of it is like all these, as we grow up, things happen that we're not able to deal with emotionally in the moment. And we suppress those feelings.
Yes.
Feelings buried alive, never die. We couldn't just allow ourselves to feel them, express them. So we buried them. They're still there. And so we have all these reservoirs. It sits as tension in our muscles, which is why when you then go at this tension with the body therapy, then those tears come out. You start crying those tears. And so I think of it as just like emptying those reservoirs of stuck emotion. And I think that that too, it frees you up to be you instead of going around like a cripple with like all these like pockets of emotions that you're trying to avoid all the time, right? Because every time you get triggered, all it is it's hitting one of those pockets. That's why you get triggered. And so when you get triggered, it's a gift to go and release that thing. And so just keep doing that over and over again until it stops, you know, triggering you.
So you have the emotional piece, because Jake likes the yellow brick road. He needs to be fed. He needs like the roadmap. So the emotional piece is one. What's the next piece?
A huge piece for me, which came much later, it was the physical piece of building my body. Because I grew up sort of, I was scared of my dad, so I didn't want to be like him. So I wanted to be more like my mom. So I grew up to be a very soft, feminine guy. And that was like 6 years ago that I had a teacher, a mentor, actually the founder of the Body SDS in therapy. So I started working with him directly. And he was like, dude, we gotta like build your masculine. Your masculine side is basically a wounded like 8-year-old, right? He's still stuck at that hurt 8-year-old boy. We gotta help him grow up. Mm-hmm. And so part of that was more emotional work, but part of it too was going to the gym and exercising and working out. And what I did there was, I think it's a brilliant system that I've developed there that I want to do something with. So he challenged me to do 8 hours of exercise per week, which just completely blew my mind, right? At that point, if I went to the gym 3 times with a personal trainer and we worked out for like 3 hours a week, I felt like I was doing pretty great. And he was like, yeah, like if you really want the body that you say you do, like 8 hours, maybe you can do it with 6 if you really go hard at it. I'm like, damn you. And so I was like, all right, challenge, accept it. I'll do 8 hours a week. Here's the rules that I made for myself. I would track it by the minute in a spreadsheet. And if I get behind by 20 minutes in 1 week, I have to catch it up the next week and do 8 hours and 20 minutes.
Dude, eight hours is a lot. You start going over 8 hours, that's a bitch.
Yeah. And so, if I'm sick, like doesn't count, doesn't matter, still 8 hours, like then you just have to catch up next week. Or if I know that I'm going to be traveling, maybe I do 10 hours this week and then I can slack a little bit next week. But that like no excuses thing is really powerful. It was also, I can do anything. Like it could be lifting weights, it can be a bicycling to a meeting, it can be swimming, it can be whatever I want to do as long as it's exercise. Mm-hmm. But then the kicker was, no personal trainer, because I don't want to have someone that I can project my authority issues or my daddy issues onto and be like, you're the one that's making me do this and blah, 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 all that stuff. It has to be something that I choose for me. And then in my head, I take my little boy, little young Calvin, who doesn't like to work out. I take him by the hand and I say, hey, we're going to do this together for us. And it's going to be fun, right? So it was all interdirected. And then again, in the process of doing that, emotions are going to come up. They are. But then I have my boy by the hand. We're doing this together. We're going through this together. Like 2 months of doing this, like completely life-changing. Completely awesome. Life-changing.
So you got the emotional piece, the physical piece. What's next? Anything next?
Then I would say the mental piece, right? Like that you're really, Byron Katie is phenomenal. If you guys have read any of her stuff, but you like gotta, that oh just, no.
Does she love what is?
Yeah, she's loving what is, exactly. Right. That process of,
dude,
just,
that's powerful stuff. That's a great book.
She's amazing. She's amazing. Yeah. I love her. Yeah. Just learning that realization that just because it's a thought in my head doesn't mean it's true. And so questioning all of those beliefs. I went through a period where I literally wrote down all of the beliefs that I could identify that I had. I got to like 3,000 or something, and then I wow. gave up. And just seeing it all written out and realizing, yeah, no, like I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that's helpful. Like, is that like just be, but have putting that distance between yourself, or myself in this case, and my beliefs super helpful.
So right? You are not your beliefs. That's really what you're, that's really, we identify ourselves as our beliefs. And it's funny because our beliefs do change. Because as we get more information, as we grow as a person, all of a sudden our paradigms start to change. And if we don't understand that, or we just get stuck in the past, then we don't grow. So I love that. Emotional, physical, mental peace. Yeah. Anything else before we go to the break?
Before we cut off on Byron Katie for a second, this is like a big takeaway from the show, because that book is really, really good. And if you're getting upset with life, take a step back. The garbage man is dumping the garbage out on the front. Like, accept it for what it is. Don't get mad at life and start to go in a tailspin and get all twisted because they're leaving trash on your front yard, okay? It is what it is. Accept it. Embrace it. You can find another path. There's other options out there. We're not stuck with these things, so don't let it get you twisted up. Love it. Accept it. Move on. Find solutions. That's a great one. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. All right. Well, Gina, we'll take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
All right, we are back. So, you know, we had some really good things there. We had emotional, we had body through the therapy, we had body through the gym, the mental. How did all this tie into your business?
To me, there's a very concrete thing, which was when I came out of the other end.
How long was this period of time, too, by the way, that you went through this journey?
It's ongoing, but really, it started to crack open in 2003, and then there's a 5-year period where I my world turned upside down, and when I came out in 2008 at the other side of that, it was. I had a moment where I was like, okay, what is it that I was here put on earth to do, right? Like, what is my purpose? What is it that I ultimately want to contribute? And the thing that came to me was, I'm here to integrate spirituality and entrepreneurship. And that was the impetus, because what I could see is that all the entrepreneurs that I know are struggling with, you know, either the mental or the emotional, or the spiritual piece, or like the physical piece is super important as well, right? But it's kind of a little bit different. But there's struggling because they're stuck in old behavioral patterns, old unconscious patterns, or like even at the biggest level, right? You can very clearly see, like, you know, the Google founders and their issues, kind of, you know, in Google at a massive scale. You can kind of see Elon and his personality and his issues in his companies. You can see with Steve Jobs or Tim Cook and Apple. You can draw that line between the personality, good and bad, and the company. And so, I saw that and I was like, if we don't work on those pieces, we're missing out, right? It's just like you set the jet to go, but like, do you have the autopilot that corrects? Are you actually able to resolve those underlying issues that have you go in an unhealthy direction? You might make a lot of money, but are you doing what you really came here to do? Are you finding meaning and fulfillment and satisfaction? Are you doing something good for the world? And so I was like, this is something that I need to teach and share with other entrepreneurs. And that was what got me to Simplero, because I was like, how do I do that? I don't know anything about this. Like, how do I do a workshop or a seminar or something? And that was in 2008, I discovered this world of online courses. And I was like, that's incredible. I can do that. And so I got into doing that and then started building Simplero so that I could build my own online courses and sell my own online courses in 2008. And then that became a business and other people started using it.
And it's funny because you think you start the business to generate revenue, but that business actually helps you out in so many different ways. You start learning these techniques and these things for your life, and then you're able to actually grow yourself personally and you're able to monetize at the same time. So that's just a wonderful combination.
Yeah, exactly.
So would you say Simplero then is a combination of your spiritual journey package for entrepreneurs? Can you describe it better than that?
Yeah. So it's like a business engine, right? A business machine. It does your website and your email marketing and your course hosting and your membership is like all the pieces that go into this type of business. So it's not a process for me teaching about spiritual journey kind of stuff. Although I do that too in my content and when I communicate with people, because it's just what I'm obsessed about and what's really transformed my life. But I really believe that there are certain products have this, it's funny because like I had this idea and then I read Steve Jobs talking about it. He said like certain products can have the spirit of enlightenment about them. That there's something about them that kind of ends up transforming you, impacting you in some way that you might not even recognize as you use them. And that was kind of what he was trying to do. And that was, when I saw that, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what my thinking around this is. Like if you create products and services from that mindset, they're going to have some special flavor to them that some people are going to notice and appreciate and some people are not.
Besides Byron Katie's book, anything that you've read in the last few years that will benefit the folks that you want to recommend?
In terms of the what I talked about with my upper limits, we call them about, you know, how I was scared of actually having the success. Gay Hendricks, his book, The Big Leap, is phenomenal. I went back to that again recently. Gay is fantastic.
Gino, you know that one?
I do not.
Oh, you stumped him. He's read just about everything. So good.
Oh, nice. That's really good. Yeah. Gay is a treasure. I've become friends with him over the years, and he's just an incredible human being. And yeah, The Big Leap is a classic.
Excellent. Well, Gino, it's time for you to take your big leap here, sir, and wrap this thing up.
Jake, we have a young Calvin Corelli living in Denmark, sitting around the dinner table with his parents, and they're talking business, and he's like, I'm going to go read to my brother since I'm smarter than him, so I'm going to go sit down and read to my brother. So he's reading to his brother, and he's getting all these limiting beliefs, and he's getting all of these unconscious things happening to him, and at a young age, he starts coding at 12 years old, and he's ripping it, Jake. He's making some money here, and he thinks by the time he's 30, he's going to be a billionaire. Everything's going to be great. Well, the 3-0 comes, and it goes, and Calvin ain't a billionaire. And by the time he's in his mid-30s, I think Calvin is probably despair. He's despondent, whereas most people would just end it or say, hey, you know what? That's it. I'm going to pack it in. He goes on a journey of personal development and personal growth and spirituality, and years later, doing the hard work, letting the emotions sit with you, going back and having that assessment, whether it's the emotional piece, it's the physical piece, and it's the mental piece, and actually working on yourself. And I always say to people, it's really a lot of work, hard work, working on yourself, but it's even harder if you don't work on yourself. You will live a life of regret. I know it. Work on yourself. Work on your own relationship with yourself so then you can start loving yourself, and that will allow you to actually resonate, and it will allow you to actually find what your soul purpose here, I think, on this earth is. And I'll end it by saying, Jake, it's important. I think we all need to find out what we're here for. It's great. Let's make money and all, but money is just the result. What do you want to do to get that result? That's the important thing, Jake.
Break those chains, Calvin. Great story. Really appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. That was an amazing summary, Gino.
Thank you.
You guys are amazing. It was so fun to hang with you guys.
Awesome. All right, gang. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake, and he's the G-Daddy. We make it happen. We'll see you next time.